Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today's topic is one we've actually been asked about a couple times. It's another one that's also been on my list for a long time. I'm kind of trying to go back to the ones that I wrote down when we first moved on to the podcast as hosts that I was really excited about, and then they get lost in the shuffle.
Oh, you know what happened to mine?
What?
We moved offices and my
whiteboard got erased.
The whiteboard with my stuff on it got erased.
Yeah. I'm going back to some of those because I always intended to do them. And this one is a little bit of a ghost story. It's got a little bit of U.S. military history, and it also features animals. So it's kind of a wacky mixed bag in terms of topics. And I decided to kind of back off of doing much of an intro on it because I kind of love the oddness of the story and I want listeners to sort of hear how it plays out. Like there's an explanation of what initially seems supernatural to some people. So we're just going to kind of set the scene and then kind of explain what was really going on and how that came to be. So it starts in 1883, and at this point, a mysterious beast was spotted in Arizona. This is the first time that this particular one is spotted. Most of this story at the beginning, I should say, is all reported by the Mojave County Miner, which was a small newspaper. And I didn't have access to those particular ones. I have it written as relayed by another researcher. So just heads up on that. So in 1883, there were these two women who were home with their children while the men of the family were away tending their sheep flock. And they had had some issues with Native Americans and sheep issues that are not really germane to the story. But so while the men were away and these two women were at home alone with the children, they had an encounter which would unfortunately prove fatal for one of them.
So, according to the legend, shortly after one of the women left the house on Eagle Creek to go get some water, the dog started barking, and that prompted the other woman to go to the window and see what was going on.
And what she saw, she described as an enormous red beast ridden by the devil. She heard screams, but because she was too terrified to leave the house, she just kind of barricaded the door. She is said to have kind of frantically said prayers the rest of the time until the men returned.
So when the men came home and heard her story, they immediately mounted a search party for the other woman who had gone out to get water. But they didn't get far because they found her nearby, trampled to death.
And because this was sort of a mysterious death, there was some suspicion initially by the authorities that examined the body that maybe she had been murdered by someone in the family, even though the condition of the body was obviously very unique in that it had been trampled. There was an inquest, but in the end, the verdict and the investigation was reported in the local paper, the Mojave County Miner, that I mentioned as, quote, death in some manner unknown.
So just a few days after that, and a few miles northeast of the first sighting, two prospectors woke up in the night when their tent was crushed. They returned to their mining camp in Orr, Arizona, with tales of this impossibly tall horse. When a party made its way back to the trampled camp, they found red hairs and large hoof prints in the area.
And naturally, this, on top of the woman having been killed in this sort of mysterious way, really sort of started this, you know, cultural phenomenon that is very natural of tall tales and gossip about what started to be called the Red Ghost. And some of the people talking about it claimed that they had seen and even pursued the Red Ghost. One said he saw it vanish into thin air before his eyes. So they really were laying on the supernatural abilities at this point.
About a month after the death of the woman at Eagle Creek, a rancher named Cyrus Hamblin was out getting stray cattle, kind of rounding them up, when he spotted the beast near the Salt River. And this was 80 miles northeast of the earlier sightings. And unlike previous encounters, he knew what it was. It was a camel.
Yeah, it was not entirely unheard of for camels to be in this area. Unusual, but not unheard of. And Hamblin could see that there was also some sort of load that was strapped to the animal's back, but he couldn't get close enough to catch the camel or identify what that was on his back. But he said that he believed that it looked like a deceased man, and eventually the camel escaped him.
Hamblin's word on the matter solidified this whole story of the Red Ghost, which people also called the Fantasia Colorado. That was what the Spanish-speaking settlers of the area primarily called it. The rancher was well-respected, and his tale was not really embellished. He didn't put a lot of, you know, crazy spin on it. He didn't throw in any supernatural or fantastical elements, except for the part that there was probably a dead man on the creature's back, which some people were kind of skeptical about.
Yeah, but he was very matter-of-fact about it. Like, I think there was a dead guy on the back of that camel. Which is a phrase you never think you're going to say, but there you go. So several weeks after Hamblin's incident, this time about 60 miles to the west of where Hamblin had had his encounter, another group of prospectors spotted what was believed to be the same animal. This, at this point, having been still believed by some people to be supernatural and others to be like, no, it's camel. They thought that the best course of action was just to start firing wildly at it. And they didn't actually hit it, however, or if they did, they merely grazed it. But as it ran for its life, the burden that was on its back, because there was something on its back, dislodged. And the prospectors, once the camel had gone, advanced on this fallen cargo, and what they actually discovered was, in fact, a human skull with some hair and a very few shreds of decomposed skin still clinging to it. And so in this moment, Cyrus Hamblin's story was completely corroborated by this rather grisly discovery. So it once again supported, no, he is really a stand-up guy that doesn't talk crazy. There is a dead guy on that camel's back.
Yeah. In 1893, so 10 years after the first sightings of the Red Ghost, a man by the name of Mizzou Hastings found a red camel eating in his garden in Orr, Arizona, and this time he shot it dead. The camel had straps of leather still tied to it, and in some places the straps had cut into its flesh. This residual strap work led people to conclude that this was the same camel that had been running around the area with a corpse strapped to it for the last 10 years.
Yeah, the corpse wasn't actually there the whole time, but it was a very intricate, like a netting almost of these straps. So he had been wearing those straps and presumably pieces of this deceased person for quite some time. But who the dead man was remains something of a mystery.
I read your notes as where the dead man was remains something of a mystery, and I'm like scattered around the desert.
Well, yeah, that part we know, or we presume. And in the years between the time that the skull had been picked up and when Mizzou Hastings had killed the Red Ghost, and there had been other sightings during that time, but there had also been a lot of speculation that perhaps the corpse had been a man who had strapped himself onto the camel when he was thirsty and near death, hoping that the animal was going to eventually lead him to water.
Didn't work, apparently.
Well, they realized that wasn't really what happened.
Well, once the felled camel and its straps had been examined, though, it was apparent that they could not have been tied by a man, the man who was riding. And this conclusion led the Mojave County miner to say this. The only question is whether the man was tied on for revenge or merely as an ugly piece of humor by someone who had a camel and a corpse for which he had no use.
Yeah, so it's never really been solved one way or the other in addition to who it was, but whether he had been alive or dead when he had been strapped to the camel. So the mystery of the Red Ghost was as solved at that point as it was ever going to be. However, that leads us to the next part of the episode, which is why a camel was wandering around the American Southwest in the first place. And before we get to that, we're going to have a word from our sponsor.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
And now we will hop back to Arizona. So the introduction of camels into the U.S. was actually a military function, and it actually took 2 decades from the time the first studies were conducted about this idea to the actual introduction of camels into the American Southwest.
It all started in 1836 when E.F. Miller, Esquire, conducted a camel study and wrote a letter detailing his findings to the U.S. quartermaster, Captain George H. Crossman of Georgia.
And in the spring of 1843, so it was still some years later, U.S. Quartermaster General Thomas S. Jessup received a letter from Crossman extolling the potential virtues of camels as pack animals for use in military service. Crossman characterized camels as imposing and being potentially intimidating to the horses favored by Native Americans, so they felt that they would have the upper hand in any dealings with natives. And camels had also, you know, after all, been part of various militaries throughout world history. And Crossman cited Miller's research as a source of validation for all his assertions about how great camels could be for the service.
This is because the Discworld books didn't exist yet.
We need to find a time machine and then hand it off to them.
Yeah, they don't pull any punches about how terrible camels can be to work with. Crossman also discussed using camels in the army with the quartermaster, Henry Wayne, who was very interested in the idea.
And then in 1848, so this is still all percolating along via years and years and years, Henry Wayne went to the War Department with this idea. And though that had already taken quite some time, it was actually another 6 years before the concept of introducing camels into military service in the U.S. took another significant step.
That was in 1854 when Jefferson Davis, the Secretary of War, made a report to the Senate proposing the introduction of camels into army use. And in addition to the previous missives that promoted the use of camels, Davis had also been influenced by naval officer Edward Fitzgerald Beale. Beale had read the writing of Évariste R. Hooke, a French missionary who penned a travel diary called Recollections of a Journey Through Tartary, Tibet, and China, during the years 1844, 1845, and 1846. He was really taken with the accounts of camels in this work, and he shared his very enthusiastic point of view on the topic with anyone who would listen, including Jefferson Davis.
And the timing of this at this point was good because of the increasing burden that the U.S. was facing in the Southwest at the time. So Davis's idea really was met with some enthusiasm. And this was because there was a growing need both for transportation of troops as well as for moving heavy loads of supplies. So this is, you know, mid-1800s when we are slowly pushing out to the West and things are being built. And the ability of camels to survive in conditions similar to those in the desert areas of the Southwest started to make them look like a pretty appealing solution to the problems.
So in early 1855, Davis was granted a budget of $30,000 to start working on a camel corps. He immediately sent Henry Wayne to the Eastern Mediterranean to find suitable camels to buy.
And Wayne was joined in this mission by Navy Lieutenant David Dixon Porter, who was actually a relative of Beale. And the two men did not make a direct route through the Mediterranean to, like, camel country. They actually stopped at many places along the way. They stopped throughout Europe. They interviewed camel experts and got their opinions. They talked to zoologists. They visited with royals who owned camels as part of their menageries. And they also made several stops around the Mediterranean. Like, they visited Tunis, they visited Malta, and in some of these places they would purchase stock if they found it suitable. They also, while they were doing all of this stuff, dropped off Wayne's son at a French boarding school where the boy stayed for several years. He did not finish the camel travel.
While you're in France,
why don't you go to school for a while?
Yeah. On February 15th, 1856, Wayne and Porter started their journey back to the U.S. aboard the USS Supply, and they were traveling with 33 camels. This was a mix of Arabian, Bactrian Tunis, and Tulu camels, along with 5 handlers.
This group landed at Indianola, Texas on May 14th. And that's where the camels were offloaded from the USS Supply. And then they began marching to their destination, which was Camp Verde. And they got to Camp Verde on August 27th of that same year.
In 1857, Porter made the journey to the Eastern Mediterranean again, bringing back 41 more camels.
Also in 1857, Beale took one of the camel handlers, who was named Haji Ali, who you will also see him listed in historical references, High Jolly, because apparently Americans that could not quite manage his name nicknamed him that.
See my expression of being rather nonplussed.
Yeah, he didn't apparently seem terribly concerned with it. But they all went on a survey expedition, which had been ordered by President James Buchanan. And this team was tasked with building a wagon road from Fort Defiance, New Mexico, to the Colorado River. And they took 25 camels with them on this assignment so that they could test out the beasts. And it turned out that the camels did a really good job.
Side note. This wagon trail also marked the travel path that would eventually become the legendary Route 66.
Yeah. First found by camels.
Yeah. My friends, Nate and Carrie, drove the entire length of that as a summer vacation last summer.
I have friends that moved out to Los Angeles last year, and they did a similar thing on the way.
I think it's an awesome, fun thing if you have road trip time.
Yeah.
Having only witnessed other people doing it.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, let's get to the destination already.
Okay.
Not be in the car all day. But that's me. It turned out that these camels could easily carry 300 pounds, and they could travel for 4 miles an hour, which doesn't sound terribly fast, but compared to other options, they did quite well, especially considering their heavy cargo, with very few stops. So they could just kind of go all day long. And they didn't really need to have provisions for their meals carried along because they were able to graze on the cedar and the creosote bush that were plentiful along the route and which other pack animals could not eat. And the camels were also able to outlast other pack animals on difficult journeys. So in some cases, when they had brought other animals along, they would have to abandon them because they could not hack the conditions.
Oh, no.
Whereas the camels could just keep going.
That's terrible.
It is. This one's a little rough for the animal lover in me.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Henry Wayne, in particular, really championed the camel's usefulness. According to one story, after hearing remarks about the camels not being impressive as pack animals, he had one of his camels loaded with 4 hay bales, which totaled more than 1,000 pounds, to just show off how strong it was.
Yeah, again, the animal lover in me struggles with a little bit of this story. Like, that's kind of abusive. But so initially, you know, at this point, the Camel Corps looked like it was going to be a success because they were doing very well in the desert conditions. They could carry loads. They could outlast mules and horses, no problem. But, of course, that is not the whole story.
If you've ever seen a book with a camel in it, or maybe just, like, seen a picture of a camel.
If you've ever seen a camel.
You're right. Even if it's been, like, a far away glimpse of a camel, you can probably grasp that they have tempers.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're known for. When I think most people, if they just do a quick like association and someone says camel, you think, oh my goodness, they're going to spit and trample me.
Yep, this proved to be a problem. They could be very difficult, and they sometimes completely disregarded their handlers. They would growl at soldiers as they approached with loads that they were going to like
pack onto them.
Oh, and also camels smell pretty bad.
Yeah, and I'm sure they probably weren't getting washed very regularly.
I'm just imagining what effort it would take to wash a camel at this point in history.
Yeah, a lot.
It would take a lot of effort.
They couldn't just pull out a hose.
No. I mean,
they're au naturel.
Probably buckets.
Maybe.
Rainstorms.
Hope.
Okay.
And that smell is actually part of the reason, it's attributed to part of the reason why they spooked the horses. And as you recall, this had been a selling point for the Camel Corps when it came to the horses the Native Americans used. But this was a huge problem when there were horses that were being used by the same U.S. troops that were also employing the camels, and they had to deal with this interspecies problem. So the horses were not delighted by the camel's presence. They would get very scared. And keep in mind, these are large animals. So when one is angry and one is spooked, you can imagine how difficult it is to sort of corral that and then that by the many that were traveling together.
Yeah, that could be deadly.
Exactly.
That's a deadly combination.
And it's probably understandable that many of the soldiers openly complained about the situation. And even General David Twiggs, who commanded Texas and thus was a very powerful man in the military, he made it pretty clear that he would just rather have mules and could we please not deal with these camels.
So as the Civil War mounted, Confederate troops took Camp Verde in February of 1861.
And so while the camels had proven their usefulness, they still were not a standard part of military operations. This was still considered an experimental concept. And they hadn't really been planned for as part of the Confederate war effort. So the animals then were, you know, there at Camp Verde. And they were used and sometimes abused, again, a little difficult for the animal lover, in a variety of sometimes kind of odd ways.
Some were used for just transporting goods and freight, just like they had been prior to 1861. Some were used for entertainment rides, and some were sent around to other bases. One was allegedly pushed off a cliff by Confederate soldiers because they found it bothersome and they didn't want to take care of it. And some were just neglected or set loose.
Yeah, I mean, my heart breaks at the thought of an animal being
thrown
off a cliff or even just abandoned or neglected. At the same time, just from the point of view of, like, someone in that situation, I can imagine that there is an element of, I don't know what to do with these things, and there is a herd of them at this camp, and they just didn't know how to deal with them. We should also mention that while being set loose in some cases may have seemed like a kindness, we should note that these animals had been bred in domestication. I mean, they were bred as stock. They weren't like wild camels that had been caught and tamed. So they had never been wild, and fending for themselves in the brush, even though they were physiologically, you know, pretty well suited to the environment, was likely a very stressful situation. And additionally, when prospectors or cowhands would encounter these animals that had been set free just wandering, they kind of viewed them as target practice. So they were really treated very poorly and inhumanely.
Union troops took Camp Verde back in 1865. But reconstruction resulted in a diversion of funds away from the Camel Corps. And as the railroad system was built farther and farther west, you know, the camels had been helping to run supplies for a lot of the construction, the need for the camels just evaporated.
And in 1866, most of the remaining camels, when Camp Verde had been taken back, were sold at auction in New Orleans, Louisiana, and also in Benicia, California. And these were sold at significant loss. Some were purchased by circuses, carnivals, or zoos. Some were likely sold to be used as meat. Some were purchased by, like, just private people who were like, I have money, I'll buy a camel. And then they often turned around and resold them for a much higher rate. They were, in essence, camel flippers.
I was just thinking camel flippers.
Yeah.
So today, there are Camel Corps reenactors who keep a small number of camels for education purposes. There's a comedy film made about the whole thing in the 70s. And there's even a children's book about it.
There's also a memorial to the Camel Corps at the final resting site of the camel handler Haji Ali in Quartzsite, Arizona. And it's kind of a pyramid-shaped little memorial that stands there and references both Haji Ali's work as well as just the Camel Corps itself. Because he stayed in the U.S. even after his work as a camel handler was done.
While the Red Ghost was felled in 1893, camel sightings continued in Arizona, California, and Mexico well into the 20th century. Even in the 1950s, there were people who claimed that there were still camels in Sonora and Baja California.
Yeah, completely random species introduced and were allegedly, you know, kind of surviving in the desert for a long time. Some being very elderly, I'm sure, and others possibly having mated and had their own little camel families.
I am going to say that I am relieved that it was not more like the introduction of kudzu.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if camels overran the Southwest the way rabbits overran Australia?
I thought about that as I was doing this. I was like, I guess camels didn't do so well in the whole propagating and sort of, you know, a huge blow up of population, which is good. I still feel very bad for the camels because I can't get past that. And it's interesting. You'll hear sometimes or read when you're looking at research about this. There are historians who like to theorize what would have happened if we hadn't completely abandoned the Camel Corps experiment, because it did seem like it had some, fairly, you know, positive aspects to it, even though the camels tended to be grumpy and problematic. You know, some like to wonder what had happened if the Union Army had incorporated them into regular service after they had taken back Camp Verde. And we'll never know, of course, but we do know that they could survive on their own in the desert for decades. So, you know, on the off chance you're in the Southwest and see a random camel, probably related to those.
Yeah.
There haven't been sightings in decades, so I would be shocked. But you never know. Unless some ridiculous wealthy person purchases one as a pet and then sets it free because they're a fool, it's probably not going to happen. But that is the Camel Corps. And that's one of those things that, because it involves so many moving parts and names that are also connected to other aspects of the Civil War, you know, it can quickly blossom out into a very huge and long thing. And we may eventually cover other parts of this story that kind of interlock. But that's the scoop on why there was a camel running around looking like a devil, killing people
with a corpse.
Yeah. And it kind of explains when you think about that, why that camel seemed to be pretty aggressive towards humans. It had clearly been treated badly. Someone had strapped a person to it and sent it off. It was carrying something around, that was tied tightly enough to be cutting into its flesh. So It probably was very grumpy. Did not associate humans with good things.
No.
So. That's the scoop.
Do you have some listener mail for us?
I do, and it's such a gear change from camels. It will involve no animal talk whatsoever. It is from our listener, Allison, and she says, I am a cartoonist who loves history, so I love being able to listen. So being able to listen while I draw is wonderful. I'm writing to ask for advice, possibly for both of you, but perhaps mostly Holly, as I know of her passion for historical clothing. I want to make a comic about the history of underwear. Okay, my aside, Allison, I just fell a little bit in love with you. Of course, she says, the first thing I did was to search your archives, and I was so happy to find the episode about that exact topic. I really enjoyed it, and it piqued my interest even more. I'm looking for suggestions for books, websites, and anything else you might think would be helpful. I don't know much about the history of clothing in general, so I have a lot of research ahead of me, so any guidance is welcome. Oh, I'm so happy to suggest my two favorite books and one other thing. The first is one called Corsets and Crinolines. It's written by a woman named Nora Waugh. It's kind of considered the gold standard of underwear history. I will tell you this, it's laid out a little bit oddly in terms of how the chapters are sectioned. But once you kind of get the hang of the structure of it, it all makes a lot of sense. And it's a pretty comprehensive history. Have you ever encountered that one, Tracy?
I don't. Well,
because you've done some historical stuff as well.
Yeah, the name rings a bell, but I have not read it.
It's a good one. I will let you borrow it if you want. The other one is one that's called Costume in Detail, and it's written by Nancy Bradford, and it kind of breaks down like different elements up close of clothing and what they are and how they all function. And it's just sort of a good, baseline education on what was happening in clothing at different points in history. The other thing that I would recommend is actually a DVD, and it's put out by Laughing Moon Mercantile, which is primarily a historical pattern company. If you just Google Laughing Moon Mercantile, it'll come up. Although the spelling of the URL is a little bit funky for laughing. I think it's L-A-F-N. I'm not sure why. But in any case, they produced it. It's a little bit old, but the information is all still, you know, basically current because they're talking about historical stuff. It's actually a DVD on how to make a Victorian corset, but the whole first part of it is kind of a history of corsets and how they function, which if you're looking at it as fact gathering so that you can draw about them, you will learn exactly what is supporting what and how it all goes together from sort of a the physics and engineering aspect, which will only make your drawings better. So those would be my recommendations for Allison and really anybody that wants to learn about historical underpinnings. Those are, pardon the pun, a great foundation for learning about foundations and where they all start. So that's that. If you would like to write to us and ask us about historical undergarments or anything else or camels, you can do so at historypodcast@discovery.com. You can also connect with us at facebook.com/missedinhistory, on Twitter @missedinhistory, and on missedinhistory.tumblr.com. We are also on Pinterest at pinterest.com/missedinhistory, and you can visit us on our very own shiny and bright website, which is missedinhistory.com. If you would like to learn a little bit more about what we talked about today, you can go to our parent website, How Stuff Works, and in the search bar, type in camel, and you will find an article that is How Long Can a Camel Go Without Water? It is quite long. Quite a long time. The article isn't particularly long.
I thought you meant the article. Was
the article is 22 pages about the camel water absorption system. No, it is brief and gets to the point. If you would like to learn about that or really anything else your mind can conjure, you can do that at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.